from this computer. So, my name is John Cunningham, and I'm interviewing Michael Byrne on Zoom for the Tuam Oral History Project. Michael is in the United States. So, good afternoon, Michael. So, I suppose we might start with your early recollections, if that's appropriate.
Okay, I'll take over from here, John. Thank you. Michael James Byrne is my adopted name. I was born James Patrick Owens in Tuam, July 22nd, 1957. I obviously don't remember my time in Tuam itself. I'm told I lived there for approximately 3 weeks and was removed by my birth mother. And there's a gap of my knowledge of what transpired at that point, but I was transferred over to St. Patrick's Temple Hill in Dublin, where I remained until August of 1961. Just over 4 years stay there, you know. I was probably in that home for so long because I was born with a handicapped right leg and foot. So I probably wasn't the first choice of a lot of people for now, obvious reasons. I'd probably do the same myself if I was an adoptive parent. But those are my first memories are of St. Pat's. And being at the age of four, I do remember glimpses, if you will, of the rooms I stayed in, the outer structure of St. Patrick's and Temple Hill. And I have nothing but positive experiences there. There was never in any abuse or anything along those lines. Documentation shows that I was actually the oldest person in Temple Hill at the time of my adoption. So documentation says I was quite special to the nuns because of the long term. And I assume the turnover, most of these adoptees were 6 months to maybe a year at that point. But August of 61, I was adopted and picked up by my adoptive mother and my godmother in Dublin. They retrieved me and we flew back on Aer Lingus. I had the old routes of Gander, Newfoundland, and on to Boston, Massachusetts, where I grew up as a Bostonian, just outside of Boston. My parents at that point, 2 years later, started putting me in Children's Hospital in Boston for corrective surgeries on that leg. So I spent a total of 6 years every summer doing corrective surgeries and painful rehabs. That's a part I remember more of getting you back in. They call it physical training now, but I called it torture when I was six. You know, but at that point, it straightened me out a lot. But also, I reflect back on the adoption process and how with my birth deformity affected my life. For the most part, I had a good home. I had an adoptive brother, Patrick. Also, he was born in Meath. And Coombe Hospital in Dublin, I believe, is his place of birth. But he was adopted prior to me by my birth parent, my adoptive parents. And brought over at the age of 6 months in 1960. And it took that gap between the two. But I neglected to mention that's where my parents saw me. And I refer to my parents as my adoptive parents. That's how I grew up as. And my mother fell for me as soon as she saw me there and arranged to adopt me as well. And obviously there was a process of, I think, a year where my brother had to be settled in the States prior to them being able to adopt a second child. So again, it took until August of 61 to bring me over. And they arranged that as well as all those corrective surgeries at the leading children's hospital in the world at the time. And I had the leading orthopedic surgeon, world renowned. So he straightened me out quite well. But during that time period, I had braces on my legs. I had a lift on my right foot, it being a couple inches shorter than my left leg. So I received a lot of teasing through my elementary years. Twofold, number one being an adoptee, number two being deformed, you know. And kids will be kids, you know.
So you were aware from a young age that you were an adopt. Obviously you remembered another environment anyway.
Always, always. Yeah. And my parents always enforced in both of us our Irish nationality. Yes. Obviously, my adopted father was Irish with the last name Byrne.
Yes.
My mother was half Irish. Donahue was her, on her maternal side. And Swedish was the other of her father, last name Norman. But they always encouraged us in our Irishness, if you will.
Okay.
And to the point of telling me to get up in the living room when guests were there to dance a jig.
Okay.
Not knowing that, number one, I never knew what a jig was.
Yeah.
Number two, it was quite difficult because they keep on forgetting that I had that little bum right leg.
Yeah.
But I soldiered through it, you know. But it's a fond memory of the fact that they always reinforce the Irishness.
Yeah.
And they took us back to Ireland. I have a photo of me, 1974, which would have been my second year of high school.
Yes.
And of me returning to the convent.
Okay.
And meeting the sister who had corresponded between my mother and herself all those years ago.
That was in St. Patrick's.
This is St. Patrick's in Temple Hill.
I
don't think the photo shows Temple Hill. I think there might have been another location at that point that they were residing. Temple Hill was a big gray stone structure. And the photo I have is red brick, which obviously you see all over Ireland, but I never remember red brick being at Temple Hill. So, but I can say her name, right? It was Sister Zavaria, and she was very kind to me and wrote some lovely letters to my parents prior to my adoption, through the adoption process, and follow-up, too, to see how I was doing. And mentioning a couple of the sisters missed me and missed sneaking the sweets to me and so on. So that's how I know about that one. You know? But Tuam to me was as foreign as Mars.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Knew nothing about it. I knew that's the town I was from, quote, end quote, but I knew nothing about Tuam. I have a photo of me touring Ireland in the 80s. Standing, leaning on the sign of Welcome to Tuam.
Okay.
With a big grin on my face, totally oblivious that I shouldn't be smiling, not with what I know now.
Yes.
But who knew at the time? Yes. I was remember being in a pub with the girlfriend I was with at the time, and her teasing me, leaning to the left and the right, pointing out that could be my cousin, that could be a sister. Look at her, look at her, you know? I shut her up quite quickly.
So by the time you went to the United States, Tuam was closed or closing anyway in the same year.
Yes, I believe. Yeah, they closed in 61, if I'm right.
Closed in 61,
So, and what went on there and all that, I never knew.
Yes.
Not until 2017.
Yes, okay.
When I started my own personal search.
Yes.
And I went and flew over to Dublin. Went in the GRO, found my listing, and that on that birth cert showed my mother's name, which I already knew, by the way. I had that in documentation. But it mentioned St. Mary's, Tuam, as the birthplace.
Okay.
And my jaw dropped at that point, because by then I knew it was in the all in the Irish papers, all over the news by then.
Yes.
What Catherine Corliss had discovered, and I got a phone call by the author of the book, my name is Bridget.
Oh, yeah.
Austin, and she interviewed me that evening, that right at at Stevens Green Hotel right there.
Okay.
And we had a good chat of about an hour. And I showed her all the paperwork that I brought with me.
Yes.
From all those years ago. And to use the Irish word, she was gobsmacked.
Yes.
At the amount of information that I have, that a lot of adoptees don't have.
Indeed.
In relation to those, that correspondence. But,
yes,
you know, one thing led to another. She introduced me to Catherine and a couple of folks in the Troom home themselves,
mm-hmm.
who are actually in the news nowadays. You see them both, these two gentlemen.
Yes.
Were actually fostered out. They were never adopted.
That's right.
And God, their stories.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I relate to them what they went through versus what I went through. I think I got the lucky straw.
Yes.
And as much as not, I don't have that emotional pain that they must have for the dejection that they endured and the beatings and
yes,
everything they went through is,
uh-huh.
I had a wonderful childhood.
Yeah.
I've traveled the world. I followed in my mother's footsteps of being in the travel industry.
Okay.
And I've been all over the world, and with that, and being born in an orphanage and all that, tremendous empathy on my part for others.
Yes. Okay.
And it's a proud trait I have to learn what other people go through and be thankful for what you have.
Yeah.
You know? So, but.
So, growing up, then you had to face this period of hospitalization every.
Correct.
Every summer, which must have probably isolated you from your friends or that. Or.
Every summer.
Yeah.
It's, you know, what boy doesn't want to play baseball or sports or just to climb a tree?
Yes.
Couldn't do it.
And you were teased at school about that, but also about being an adoptee, which was obviously says that it was out in the open, essentially.
That, it was well, yeah, sure, it was well known. Beside the fact that, well, I was always bragging, I'm not from Ireland, you know.
Okay, right.
Yeah, you know? But yeah, that was always there, you know.
Yes.
But you know, you live your life.
Yes.
It's the only one you got, so you keep on going through. But it was a tough childhood as far as the ability to do physical things.
So sport was ruled out?
Obviously gave it a go. I tried my best, and, you know, playing hockey goalie and trying out into high school and realizing I had no reason to believe that I belong in this group.
Yeah.
So I promptly retired from that sport. You know, some of those people went on to play in the NHL, so they're quite good.
Okay.
So, but in any case, there's, you know, and another sad thing, I've met many friends in the hospitals too. And I have a letter from 1968 from my roommate who died of leukemia that year.
Oh.
And now his last summer was spending with his buddy in at the hospital, me.
Yeah.
I received I have a photo of the two of us with that kind letter from the parents stating how much our relationship meant to each other.
Okay.
So there was little things that,
yes,
if I had gone down different paths, I'd never experience.
Yes.
You know, but.
And you were strongly conscious of an Irish identity, and you were taken to Ireland, by your parents on one occasion, and you came back yourself.
I've been back to Ireland easily 20 times over the years.
Yeah, okay.
Through Bord Fáilte invitations as a travel agent, through running tour groups myself.
Yes.
Sitting beside the driver and a coach, driving through the back roads of Ireland and pointing things out, you know.
Yes. Okay.
But great experience, same in the best hotels in Ireland, you know.
Yes.
You name it, I've slept in that bed,
you
know. And a few I won't name.
Yes.
No, I'm kidding you.
And you had had this sense of identity of your background growing up. Your parents, your adoptive parents, were reasonably well-to-do, strongly Catholic. Am I wrong?
Yes, very much Catholic. Matter of fact, the parish priest, while building the rectory, stayed with my parents prior to us coming. This is the mid-50s. The church was built in 57, same year as we were born. And whilst the rectory was being built, the parish priest, our second home, if you will, for the parish was our house.
Okay.
We were maybe three blocks away from the church itself. But I was brought up Catholic, elementary schools, high school. And so I had the nuns from the first day of my life until I graduated high school.
Yes. Okay. Right. That's the strong Catholic connections was probably helpful in relation to arranging the adoption as well.
I think, was it a requirement?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They be Catholic.
Indeed. Yes, yeah. Yes. You know, but they were more than Catholic. They were. They were.
They were active.
Yeah. They were active. Yeah.
Active Catholics.
Yes. And your mother was a travel agent, you said. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
And yes, my dad was a steam fitter by trade.
Okay.
He learned it in World War II. He was in the Navy in the Pacific in World War II.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And so a strong man. Now, emotionally, neither of them, it was never much hugging.
Yes.
Things along those lines, which don't know why. You know, maybe I remember attempts at it, but it never happened all that much, you know.
Yeah.
You know, he was a strong man, said what he wanted. He wouldn't take shite from anyone.
Yes.
Especially his two little boys, you know.
Yeah.
But they brought us up well.
Yeah.
You know, good discipline, good whatever.
Yeah. And what age were they roughly when the adoptions took place?
They were mid-30s, I believe.
Yes.
If I do the math, 24 to 64 would be 40. So he'd be 37, actually, my dad, when he was born.
Yeah.
This is another interesting fact. They died early. I lost them 30 years ago this year.
Okay, yes.
30 years passed. I was 30 years with them.
Yes, okay. So they were in their 60s then when they
died young. My dad at 67, my mom at 63, within a month of each other.
Oh, right, okay.
So it was a terrible year for me, my 34th year. Yeah. But,
So you had that consciousness of an identity. And I suppose, when did you feel that you, when did you start to chase up your background, or when?
A lot of adoptees, we never do anything while our adoptive parents are still there.
Yeah.
You know, they are my parents. They raised me. So I never did anything, pursuing anything prior to then passing in 1991.
Yeah.
From there, 91, I made inquiries, but it seemed everywhere I went. And remember, I'm in Boston, I'm not in Ireland.
Of course.
So obtaining information or what paths to go down was pretty hard. I remember going to Catholic Charities and them saying they couldn't release any information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't know who to write to in Ireland. Who do I appeal to, you know? I'm another speck of grain of sand to them, you know?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I always wondered. I've been back multiple times and never knew what path to go down.
Yeah.
But that emotional tug has always been there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Always.
Yeah.
I mentioned it before in other meetings I've had with other folks over in Ireland over the past couple of years. Leaving on that plane every time from a return trip from Ireland,
yes,
brought easily tears to my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
To, you know, that something's missing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the missing.
You were aware of your birth mother's name, is that right?
Yes, it was on documents. I always knew. Yeah, Annie Owens. Yeah, I always knew that was there because of the documentation my parents showed us.
Yes, okay. Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, but everything, my father's name was always a big slash through that.
Yeah.
Not even redacted, just an empty box.
Indeed,
Yeah,
yeah.
as was the case.
So you felt that
But
Paul kind of took a little
going back
while.
to
Yeah,
Chum,
yeah.
well, the poll was there, but the answers were never there.
Yes.
So, I couldn't answer that draw because there
Yes.
was nothing to go to, It's, even talking to Irish friends through the business, everyone, shake their head and not knowing what to do. So it
Yes.
was tough,
Yes.
not knowing.
So, at a certain point then you did begin to find some information. That was here in Ireland, is that right?
It is, yep. Back in 2017 is
Yeah.
when it all started. And finding out on that trip when I after Dublin, and I took the train over to Galway, and I was picked up by one of the gentlemen. I don't know if I can say their names or not, but
I think it's okay if you want to. We can
is it?
always
Yeah.
redact later on if we think if we think otherwise. Yeah.
Yeah, well, the two gentlemen was PJ Hafferty, I believe is his last
Yeah.
name.
Haverty, yeah.
Yeah, great. He picked me up. I was staying at the Jury's, and because I'm a travel agent, I know where the best hotel was.
Okay.
And take
Yes.
a left, I'm on Key Street already. So,
Yes.
he picked me up in front of Jury's and took me up to Tuam for the first time.
Yes,
And
okay.
we had a chat along the way. He told me his story. And
Yeah, okay. You had already obviously established contact by that point. So you got some pointers from people in Ireland, is that so?
the door started opening at that point.
Yeah.
As far as information,
Yes.
and Facebook was.
Yes. So you made contact with the survivors groups, is that right?
Yes,
Through Facebook.
the ARA, the Adoption Rights
Yes.
Alliance, very informative. It's a closed group,
Yes.
but in there's proper documentation to be able to give you leads to be able to pursue and open up avenues to information that you never knew you had before.
Yes.
So them and support groups. There's another Troom group that was with for a while, run by a couple of the others that have survivors,
Yes.
relatives in the tomb.
Yes.
So it really helped me a lot. And that conversation between them and Patrick Mulroney was the other gentleman,
Yes.
along with Catherine Corliss. We spent the afternoon in a hotel,
Yes.
and I was showing them my documentation and then them telling stories and it. A lot of suggestions from Catherine where to go and so on,
Yes.
and then it's been another 4 years since then. Here we are now in 2021,
Yes.
and it's like night and day what I know now versus when I never knew.
Yes, okay. So you have established a few other the area where your birth mother came from and a few other details.
I've discovered second cousins.
Yes.
They're the closest. My birth mother's family have all passed.
Yes.
She had a sister and two brothers. They're all gone.
Yes.
Obviously, the grandmother is gone, but I have all their pictures supplied by from my second cousin.
Okay, right, okay.
And they live in Charlestown,
Yes.
as well as another one in Chicago. They emigrated over, and they're the ones that gave me what little history I know of my mother. And
So,
she
do
had
you
good
want to
memories
talk
about
about
her.
your mother? To tell us a
I
little
don't
bit
really
about
don't
her.
know that much about her. I've tried. She ended up in Philadelphia.
Okay.
When, I don't know.
Yes.
I received documents of her death certificate, which my second cousins had.
Yes.
Probably being the closest living relative. And they sent that along to me, along with the only photo I have of her, too, which I looks like it was in later years. It was taken in Philadelphia.
Yes, okay. So you don't know whether she had a family in Philadelphia?
But I tried to track down. No, as far as I know, she never married.
Yes, okay.
No, I have no siblings, at least on her side. No, she worked in, I think as a nurse, because the picture shows her all white, you know, so a nursing assistant or whatever, or caregiver in a nursing home, I don't know. But I tried to track where she lived, maybe where she worked, to try just to get, you know, some conversation with somebody who might have known her.
Yes.
To no avail. So to me, unfortunately, my mother's a mystery.
Yes. Do you know what age she was, say, when you were born or anything?
Yes. Yeah, she was 26.
But she was, yeah, yes.
Yeah. And my father was 28, my birth father.
So you subsequently, you had the birth cert, your mother, or the your own birth cert, which had your mother's name. You subsequently established the name of your father. Is that so?
That happened yesterday.
Yes. Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. So you can see, even while I give you this testimony, my story is changing all the time.
Yes, indeed.
So I might have to knock on your door a few years from now with an update. Yes. Hopefully so. But no, I found my father's name, John Hart.
Yes.
And it's just listed him as 28 years old, of Irish nationality, and occupation farmer.
Okay. Nice. Okay.
Which is a good guess for someone in the west of Ireland, you know?
Indeed. Indeed. Yes. Okay.
But beyond that, obviously it's all new to me. The documentation I received yesterday, I still need to psychologically digest.
Of course, yeah, of course. I don't want to press you to talk about it now either while you're still.
Yeah. Well, I told you prior to our interview that I would send that along to you for your edification as well. Yeah. Just, you know, at this point, sharing for me is cathartic.
Yes, okay. Yeah, okay.
So okay. I'll do so.
Yeah. But. So. That's all very, very, very interesting, and I suppose it's also striking that it's unfolding still at the moment, and it's obviously there are other discoveries to be made.
Yeah, it's like a mini series. You're going to have to wait the next year for the next, it's a, you know, segment to come out of my story.
Yeah. Yes. And you have made and you maintain contact with the alliance in Chewam, is that right? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're a good group. The Tomb Alliance group you're referencing?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, they're the first group that actually I feel something in common with. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that we're all born in the same place. But there's so many adoptees in Ireland, you know, that everyone falls into their little niche. Mm-hmm. And I feel that this group is my little niche I belong in.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Relative pain, relative stories that, you know, and enlightenment too. They're telling me things that I never knew of Shroom.
Yes. Well, you obviously have limited memory, no memory based on 3 weeks.
No, and I've always wondered what tomb, you know, you pitch, what did it look like? What were the buildings? I've only seen one. I think the press uses it all the time as well.
Yes.
But what, you know, I stood there on that day with PJ wondering, what was the layout here? How could they have done this to these children?
Mm-hmm.
What? How big was this building? Yes. What room was I born in? Things that I'll never know, what you wonder about.
Yeah. Yes. I suppose we'll piece some of that together. They were all of a standard plan. So We can, even though the photographs don't show the entire building, the ones we've seen, we know they were all based on a uniform plan, the ones that were built in 1940.
Were they barracks or something prior?
They were.
Did I read that? Yeah.
They were the poor law workhouses,
right?
But they were built prior to the famine, and their greatest use was during the famine period. And they remained in use till the new state was established. And the new state, reconfigured the health and welfare system, but they used these buildings, which were available, even though they kind of represented something very negative in the perception of most Irish people being associated with the famine. Anyway. Right. I'm talking too much.
Well, no, that's one thing about I've always appreciated and always learned is Irish history.
Yes.
Everything, you know, like the Rising, for instance. You know, I could pretty much tell you everything that went on, you know. But the history of the workhouses and all that, you know, it's one shame after another for the British, then the Irish government, but, you know.
Yes.
They were, you know, I know the Irish state probably had no money back in the 20s and 30s, and that's where the Catholic Church jumped in.
We're quite eager to jump in, I suppose, arguably.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll help you form a country. Yeah. We'll model it after the Vatican.
We've covered the ground that I had.
I don't know, are there other issues you want to talk about? I've lost you. You sound muted now.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Am I muted?
No.
No, I said I've covered the ground that I had hoped to cover, but perhaps there's something I should have asked that I didn't ask, or there may be something
else to talk about. I think it's common knowledge that I know minimal on tomb. I'm learning every day. But what's common is the life experience of adoptees, you know.
Yes.
We always have that wonder of what ifs.
Yes.
And if I grew up in Ireland, where would I be right now? And mm-hmm. How would my life be different? There's so many questions that will never be answered.
Mm-hmm.
So you just have to soldier on and do your best.
Yeah. Well, all of the experiences are different. Some people, like yourself, spent weeks, and some people spent years in Tuam. So we're interested in all of the diversity of the experience there. And the interview, your testimony, will be a valuable part of the archive. And we are putting the material up. It may take some months to get to go through all of the details, including your approval and so on. So will I stop the recording now?
Fine. Yeah, I'm good with it. Yeah.
Just a moment. Stop or pause? Will I stop it entirely then, or will I pause?
Stop.